John Coltrane and some outstanding sidemen with Blue Train, the title track of his 1957 album. Of course, Coltrane is on tenor sax, Lee Morgan on trumpet, Curtis Fuller on trombone, Kenny Drew on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Philly Joe Jones on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and on this day, funeral services are held for Stefan Clark, the 22-year-old father of two, shot dead on March the 18th by two Sacramento Police Department officers investigating a complaint, they said, about broken car windows. Clark was in the backyard of his grandmother's home where he, too, was living with his two children at the time of the shooting. The officers, when they came upon him, thought he had a gun and fired 10 shots each at him, killing him instantly. But the object Clark had in his hands, as it turned out, was a cell phone. The community erupted in protest, as did many others within and outside of Sacramento, after Clark's death, charging a cover-up and demanding an open investigation that would lay bare all of the facts. We discussed this story before, in the immediate aftermath of the shooting and killing of Stefan Clark. But I want to return to it today, and we will return to it several times more, because there are major, major issues here to be dealt with. And the main thrust of what I want to talk about is the need, the clear and evident need for new tactics, new approaches, new ways of operating in civil rights advocacy, especially in police killings. And I say that having myself participated in quite a few protests over police killings. And I don't want to be misinterpreted here that I'm wagging a finger of blame at anybody. But I'm saying we've gone down this road way too many times. And yet we see that despite the fact that in so many cases there was no justice, we still continue to see the same approach being applied to so-called community involvement in these cases. If we keep doing the same things over and over, despite the fact of a spotty record of results, then we simply have to entertain the possibility that we are quite mad. And here is, from my perspective, I'm just sharing with you my perspective over the years of covering these kinds of cases. I derisively called it the collectors of bones. And I meant to refer to the practice and the people involved in the immediate aftermath of a major catastrophe like this. Somebody is shot dead by the police, and it is immediately apparent that something is way wrong here. You smell the odor of cover-up. You smell it. It's in the air. And you don't even have to be a seasoned detective to put two and two together. I've been writing about these cases for many years. Okay. We see the same people showing up, and it has become a kind of ritual. When such and such happens, you call them. They're on the scene. And truth be told, they have fulfilled this job so many times that you could say they have a franchise on it. They may not have wanted it, but this is how it's turned out. In the middle of a major catastrophe like this in Sacramento, you call Al Sharpton. Why? Because Al Sharpton too has been involved in these kinds of cases, ostensibly as an advocate for the grieving and aggrieved family. And he comes in and he fulfills any number of roles. He is at once the person who is looked to by the system to chill things out. But make no mistake about it. He's very clear about the usefulness of this kind of involvement in terms of a public persona. Here he is. He isn't asking for the job, but people are asking him, turning to him to get some kind of relief because there is none. That helps. That increases his value. And that's how Al Sharpton has gone from local leader to national icon. I'm not going to discuss here what I think of the role of Al Sharpton in these kinds of things, but I can tell you many times it's a good thing that he was there because nobody else would have been. And even though you have to watch these folks with one eye open and one eye closed, you can see the evidence, the incontrovertible proof that in the Black community, there is no sense of organization in terms of how the community is to be managed, especially in terms of crisis. Remember, we're talking here about a system that is created by a system to protect the system. The police department is such a system. And it has at its hands, at its ready, everything it needs to prevail and to quash any kind of uproar, any kind of protest. I've been in enough of them. So I'm saying it occurs to me that starting now, we have to ritualize certain things in our communities. And we have to give very serious thought about our methodology, because even in crisis, there is opportunity to further exacerbate the problems that we are experiencing. Because we have very few people who are coming into the community to actually help it, as opposed to exploiting it. Benjamin Crump, who heads up the National Black Lawyers Association, has been involved in many of these cases, the cases I've talked with him on air, and he is trying. I am not suggesting in any way that there's something sinister. I'm saying only that it may very well be the case that he's doing the best he can with what he has. And in that sense, it's better than nothing, much better than nothing. But we've talked about the speed in the immediate aftermath of cases like this. Lawyers push not for justice. Justice is not number one. They push for settlements, which undermines the push for justice. So here we have a conundrum. The community is demanding justice, but the very people who are placed, given a place in this scenario as leaders, are happy if the case is settled. They're not going to put justice at the top of the list, because they do not have the wherewithal, and let's not dilly-dally about it, they don't have the wherewithal to compel justice. Even if millions of people were to turn out in the street, they don't have the call. They don't have the power to make that call. But they have to sound like it. Excuse me. Yesterday, we saw a very embarrassing turn of events by none other than Stephon Clark's brother and others. He clearly was seen as a leader in that sense, interrupting a city council meeting and hooping and hollering and carrying on, putting his butt in front of the members of the city council and just screaming. And I couldn't think of anything more emblematic of powerlessness than that. Your brother is shot dead by two cops. And your power is to interrupt a city council meeting, screaming, carrying on, and whatnot. You're putting your face in the city council members, you're putting your butt in their faces, and you're taking on the mayor, knowing full well that it is hardly likely that anything would happen to you. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the silliness of it. And I don't believe that grief suffices as a reason to behave that way, to be out of control, and to possibly undermine the very process you're trying to move through to get somewhere in terms of at least a loose definition of justice in this case. It must have felt good to be face to face with the mayor for the first time in your life. And you're hooping and hollering and carrying on, and everybody else around you is doing the same thing. And you have achieved nothing, which suggests clearly there's nobody in charge here. Everybody's doing what they want to do, and people are supposed to understand that your grief is so deep, we have to excuse your irrational and disrespectful conduct that disrespects your own brother. We have to have something that we can work with, maybe a kind of manual, if you will. I'm suggesting it because this particular scenario has played out so many times in our community and with exactly the same result. And every time it happens, we keep holding on to the illusion that maybe if we show enough force, maybe if the community were, more forceful in expressing its anger and so forth, this would turn the tide. No, I don't believe that. I believe instead we have to invest in developing methods and methodologies in which we control our communities and we arm our people with the knowledge that they must have in order to cope with this, because clearly we are not in charge. We think we are, but we're not. And these would include practical things, concrete things, sequential things that must be done when these things happen. Okay, we have this tragedy. Stephon Clark is shot and killed. Could I ask if a group of people were assembled to conduct their own investigation and gathering of evidence? No, they still left it in the hands of the police 100%. You see, something like that is easily, something could easily be done. You don't know what you might find You have no idea what you might find. And therefore, you take that much power into your own hands. Is anybody investigating the officers who did the shooting? What their records were? These things should all be public and they should be done quickly. You have to assemble something of your own so as to be a system, your own system of checks and balances against the police. You're making your own case. But the lawyers are not going to help in that regard. We need a national manual. And we need these workshops. These ought to be workshops that should be done. What to do in the immediate aftermath of a police killing? Instead, the police are doing the killing, and the police own all of the information and all of the evidence. That doesn't make sense. That's not a proactive way of responding. The protest should go on. That's one aspect of it. But who is doing the other aspects of it? People should know. These are the unique problems of our community. Other communities don't have to worry about this. So then they shouldn't. In the African American and Latino communities, you should know these things because they can happen to you or someone in your family. What do you do then? It is as essential as having a booklet on preventing fires. Excuse me. We have to develop these tools. How to organize a protest? You have to get that together. Who in your community is good at organizing protests? What do they advise? Develop a manual on how you conduct a protest in modern times. To assure the safety of everybody and to make sure that the point is made. Who in the immediate situation in any community are the touchstones of that community? Who has that information? Which church is going to be the recognized place for people to gather? You know, these are the things that we ought to be doing. They're not, you know, so you wait until something happens, and then the first hang up is you don't know what you're doing. It will take you a day or two. We have to have something. Or we have to have a guide on how to develop something. And every home ought to have a copy. We have more than enough examples of the kinds of things that typically happen in a crisis like this. What to do? How to keep the community focused? And in that way, You respect. You show great respect, not just for the situation, but for the family and for the community as a whole. I've been in several protests called ostensibly to protest an injustice involving the death of someone. And after each protest, I myself had to go someplace quiet and say, geez, I survived that. It could have been really bad. And every time it happened, I said the same thing afterwards. We've got to find a way to do things differently, because we are literally playing into their hands. I'm not being melodramatic here. And this is not a critique. This is sound advice. And this is a reminder of the work we have to do. We keep pretending we are like any other community. We're not. We keep pretending that in this struggle, everybody will play fair. They won't. And we have to have some kind of guide that tells us what we are supposed to do, what everybody's supposed to do, so that we don't get confused as to whether Al Sharpton and Benjamin Crump are tending to the family or the community. So we won't get confused about that. If they are coming in specifically to help the family, that's one thing. Therefore, it will not be fair to thrust upon them the responsibility of dealing with the whole community. This is a specific thing that they're doing, but they should be accountable to the community and let the community know what they're doing. There has to be a process, a procedure, so that people don't get confused. We got confused recently with the death of Eric Garner in New York City. We thought that the public, that is, and the community thought that the involvement of Al Sharpton and Benjamin Crump had to do specifically, yes, with the family. But then they were acting like they were doing things in behalf of the community. We have to have some clarity here. Because many things that were done in the course of assisting the family would not have passed muster in the sense of assisting the community. Two different agendas. The community thought that the quest was for justice. I explained this. But you can see all along that the top priority was to arrive at a settlement. We saw it in Ferguson, Missouri. Again, the same cast of characters were involved. We thought it was about justice. And I said, no, this is not about justice. This is about arriving at a point of settlement. That's all it is. So that we are not confused, we therefore should have a system ourselves as a community as what is likely to happen, things you will have to deal with, but also about ways that you can help. And education is the key. There was clearly no one yesterday in a position to tell Stefan's brother, back off. Don't do that. You're making us all look bad. Today, I'm reading in the paper that he says he thinks he owes the mayor an apology for his behavior. Well, it's too late. Because you handed the system what it wants and what it needs, which is to step back and have you do the work of shaming yourself and the community. Say, see, this is what we have to put up with. It is too late now. You could apologize all you want, but we already saw your behavior and it was condemnable. And nobody was in charge of that whole process and that whole decision as to where to direct the energy and how to do so. As you look over the years of many of these protests, you would see how much time and talent was wasted, just wasted. Nothing is accomplished. And much of it had to do with egos. People wanted their share of the limelight. I remember covering the funeral in Brooklyn, or this is in the 1980s now, of Yusuf Hawkins, young man. He was about to buy his first car, used and of course, not new, but that was not the issue. He had worked and saved up some money. And he had three of his buddies who were going to go with him to look at this car, which, as it turned out, was in an all-Italian neighborhood called Bensonhurst in Brooklyn. The parallel story is, at the same time this was happening, silly West Side Story kind of theme was working itself out in Bensonhurst. A bunch of racist local kids were on the lookout for someone of color coming into the neighborhood, supposedly to romance a local Italian girl. Well, Yusuf popped up because he was on his way to look at this car, and his friends popped up. And the baseball bats came out, and even a gun that was used to kill him. Okay. This blew the lid off the tensions, not only in Bensonhurst, but throughout the city of New York that had enough of this nonsense. But here's the thing. While all of this was going on, the leadership that emerged at the time principally involved Al Sharpton. Okay. I interviewed the parents and so forth and wrote stories, different stories, highlighting different aspects of this tragedy. But leading up to Yusuf Hawkins's funeral was a big tug of war behind the scenes as to who will preach his funeral. Would you believe that? Who was going to command the lion's share of attention, media attention, because there was every indication by the media that they were going to be showing up to cover the funeral. Jesse Jackson was livid that he was not selected to do that. Al Sharpton, of course, had the prerogative. But then emerged Minister Louis Farrakhan. And he outshone them all. The family agreed to have Minister Farrakhan deliver the eulogy. Now, this is the kind of stuff that is going on at the moment when everybody's attention ought to be on getting justice. They're busy fighting each other and arguing and pushing and shoving and making all kinds of noise among themselves about who will get to preach the funeral, because the television cameras will be there and the microphones will be there. And it is a big thing. Who's going to preach the funeral? I've seen this so many times. It's a big fight. When there is a sense that this particular funeral will be a funeral of substance, it will command a great deal of media attention and so forth. And you know, they have to have the ones who believe themselves to be the leaders are the ones commandeering the thing. Just so you know, a news release went out electronically to the media in the matter of Stephon Clark's funeral. It came from the public relations arm of the National Action Network, which is Al Sharpton's organization. And it outlines to the media who is going to be given access and to the broadcast, and how the media should be hooking up with the central pool and all of this stuff. All of this is going on to assure that all coverage would recognize that Al Sharpton is the person who is to be covered here. And this is a big thing. Now, you and I and others may think it's a sad situation. And, you know, just could we get this young man buried with some degree of dignity? Oh no, there's a whole thing, a whole process going on that has nothing to do with that. It has to do with recognizing who's in charge here and who therefore deserves the lion's share of coverage. And it should, according to the news release to the media, it should be Al Sharpton. This is how things are going. Now, does that in any way advance the cause of justice? No. Does that in any way give us a better understanding of what happened and where things are going? No. But even at the man's funeral, the attention belongs to Al Sharpton, not the person who was killed. You see, this is how it works. I'll take a little break now and come back to your questions and comments right after this at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about getting closer somewhere, somehow, to communities that are particularly likely to experience this kind of tragedy and catastrophe. We ought to have a manual, a working manual for all households on how to manage through this kind of catastrophe, what to do, who to talk to, what to keep in mind as leaders show up. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And I raise this question, I've been raising it for years. It is sometimes so sad that there is no other alternative but to accept the help that comes because there's nothing else that comes. So we take help wherever, you know, we could find it. But it is not necessarily in line or in tune with what is needed and how this gets us any modicum of justice. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, how are you?
Okay, thanks, and you?
I'm okay, persevering. I'm sorry I missed that meeting on Sunday, but because of that time change, I made an error. Now, if I knew y'all were going to be there till 6, I would still show up. But so I'm sorry I missed that. Yeah, but the next time I'll definitely try to be there.
What are your thoughts today?
Yes, I must say this. In terms of the young man's brother's response, I could understand him losing control. And I think it's kind of sad that we have to feel bad about, like, if we should lose control in a situation like that, that we should apologize to the system. I think that's a debris of slavery and colonialism. That we feel that we must apologize to this, especially Caucasian system. You know, it's like victim mentality. You're victimized and you lose control, and now you must feel bad and apologize to them. I have been abused by the police on several occasions, and on one particular occasion, I was in a little town, a predominantly white town, and I was riding a bicycle, went through a red light on a bicycle. And about 6 police cars came because me, a black man, went through a red light on a bicycle. I was handcuffed and taken to the police station. And I'm telling you, it was almost like the last straw. And if I had my way, I would have...
I understand that, but understand this as well. This is no ordinary situation. And because you are grieving, you're not the only one grieving. You still have to be aware that your behavior, your conduct, what you do could impact the long-range plan. And it is, in fact, not about you. This is not about you. It's about your dead brother. And getting some modicum of justice. And when you choose to behave that way, whether, you know, you agree or not, you are putting additional obstacles in the path of justice. And it doesn't gain you anything. You're on camera, but people are seeing you act like a fool. And that doesn't help. You're a grown man. Nobody should have to tell you as a grown man, no matter how aggrieved you are, that it is just not right to behave that way. It just isn't right. And we should say that. He possibly endangered probably a favorable, some kind of favorable help from the city council itself. And he could have used his talent and time to help the process, not hinder the process. He's a grown man. Use your brain. That is not the way to behave, period. That is not the way to do it. Jeff from New Jersey, you're on the air.
All right, listen, yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
Oh, okay. If we're going to put something in place that will help us in these situations, I think that you would take a person like Alton Maddox and have him train young black lawyers to represent the justice that's needed for the communities. Secondly, immediately what we can do is when it occurs in certain towns like in Ferguson or, you know, somewhere, that you boycott it. As the gentleman said yesterday, boycott it. Don't spend a black dollar in a town unless it's in a black business. And the same thing in your communities in New York. Don't spend it and make the merchants put pressure on City Hall to say, you know, we need to stop this. Because when you do these things, it's costing us money. We can't pay the taxes. We can't pay our bills. We can't pay the taxes. So those are two things I think that we could do. But we have to have a leadership that has multi heads to it, which means if one goes down, another one's going to pop up. And that is an equal process across the board as far as control, as far as what's, you know, who's in front of the camera, et cetera, et cetera. So that there is no pushing and pulling. And then if there is, you know what, let them handle that. You know, if there's a Sharpton wants to handle the publicity and so on and so forth, let the young black lawyers handle the justice piece of it. You know, we need someone up front and maybe they can do what they do. But if we have some young black lawyers that are actually working in the process, none of that is going to matter, right? Only the coverage is going to matter. But what we want are laws. We want justice. We want people put in jail for murder. We want cops held accountable for, you know, 74 shots on a person with a key in his hand. You know, we want all of those are the things that we want to correct. You know, who's on television? Half the people are not watching television anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter. You know, what matters is what is done in the courts and what kind of justice is meted out.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you for your opinion. This is what I'm saying. We've gone past the time when we could do things ad hoc. This is not a, you know, we do it as it comes kind of thing. No, we have to scientifically prepare as communities all across the nation and as individual households what to do. Because the system has any number of ways, infinite ways to frustrate the process and to arrive at a predictable outcome. We're always running from pillar to post in the moment of a thing happening. And so we are always frazzled. We seem not to be following. There are some who are following because they are making up the rules themselves. But we need to have more than this ad hoc reaction to a problem that has now become, beyond a shadow of a doubt, an endemic problem in Black and brown communities in particular. So we can't approach it unscientifically and, you know, willy-nilly. We have to know what we're doing. And this is a massive education effort. I liked your suggestion, Jeff, about, you know, having a cadre of younger people taking on the training in many different areas that would be very helpful. It's an excellent idea. Until you see what the response will be when you say to the community, we are starting such and such a project, we will have an operating expense of X amount of dollars, and to get this thing started, we need your participation. Now, I doubt you will see the enthusiasm for such a thing at that time. The community is really not very enthusiastic about funding its own freedom. This is a problem. I'm not telling secrets out of the house here. It is known. Blacks would put $1 billion plus into a movie. Will they spend one-tenth of that funding a worthwhile project to safeguard their lives and their communities? You know what the answer is. So it seems we are destined to go from tragedy to tragedy and having to include all the other crazy things that come along with it in terms of who is seeking power, who wants coverage, who wants to be known as the king of the blacks, the people who are the ones that you have to come to. There's only one black lawyer in this entire U.S. of A. who can handle these things. I, you know, these are the questions. This is what this is showing us. So far, we don't seem to have any reason to believe that in times of crisis, we have choices that we can make, that all have the same thing in mind and in common, which is to see to the interests of the community. We have people sending out press releases, a public relations firm sending out press releases about, you know, how to cover this funeral. This is how bizarre it is. And who is to be covered? You know, so even death and funerals are managed in the context of what's next for the main cast of characters. This is so pathetic. It is so revolting. And we don't have a central theme of what we ought to be fixed on here. What the focus should be, the entire focus should be, and what role every person, no matter where you are, what role you can play if, in fact, the issue really is justice. You know, Tony from Orlando, you're on the air. You have only a few minutes, though.
Hi, Detrice. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to try to get my opinions out. I really don't have any faith in this system as far as fixing anything. The problem, obviously, is the system. But I think what we have to do is dig deep inside, get down to basics. I know a lot of people are not able to do that and are far beyond that. But for example, what I do, I go to work, I drive straight home. I don't leave my house. Once my car parks in my driveway, I'm in my house with my family, and that's what I focus on, my family. This system, this society has worked hard to destroy our families. That is one of the problems, because in many of these police shootings, our own families are calling the police on our own family members. And when these policemen show up that are not even from, in a lot of cases, our communities, they come blazing full force with guns. I mean, one thing is to, in my opinion, I believe the system should disarm. I mean, we should have a first responding police force that is not armed so that they can assess the situation before they start coming in, like if they're going to war on somebody. Because, you know, they treat people in this system worse than they treat animals in zoos. But we need to get to basics. You know, like the previous caller said, if that town, like there's a town near where I live at. I live in Florida right now. I hear rumors there's KKK over there. You know what I do? I don't go over there, you know, because there's nothing over there for me. And when I was in the north, there was a little Jewish town. If you were the wrong color, they pulled you over. They gave me it, you know. So what I did, I never went in that town. Unfortunately, I understand that we want to feel like we're free and we can go anywhere we want, but this is an extremely racist country. And there's certain places, like you mentioned, the kid in Long Island. I believe it was Long Island back in the day when he
Bensonhurst.
Got mugged.
Bensonhurst.
Yeah, Bensonhurst, when he got they got attacked by you know, by those racist kids over there. In many cases, it's not even the law enforcement, but it's just people in general. So one thing, it's a very complicated situation, as far as, but it all stems to racism and our how we conduct ourselves, because they want to set a narrative as if we act the way we act. That's why you felt the need that to say that you know what the guy did yesterday was you know, he should apologize for that, whatever, because they set that narrative that we act a certain way, and that justifies their reaction towards the way we act. So that justifies them shooting us down like a less than an animal. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we have to leave it there, Tony, for today. Thank you so much for calling in and contributing, and thank you all for contributing. This is the end of the program. Expanding Mind with Eric Davis is coming up next, and let's talk to each other again tomorrow on Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.